We've all been there in the dying seconds of a football match, be it real or online, and in the quest for a goal, a piece of daring do is pulled out of the bag and we fluff our lines immediately. Not John Swift and not Reading FC, who produced not one but two late equalisers this week to earn solid results at Wolves and Swansea. Welcome to a pretty optimistic episode 204 of the Tireless Den podcast with your host Mark Mayo, and joining me to talk about two 1-1 draws this week is Ollie Allen. What do we call you now, Ollie? Of course, you're the assistant editor of the website, that goes without saying, but podcast preview sort of ex-host in a way, and filling in as you did so admirably for me while I was selling myself a couple of weeks ago.
You can call me a man of many talents, I think, not to blow my own trumpet, but yeah, an awful lot happier than I would have been if we lost on Saturday. I was thinking before we came on, actually, that I came on the show after the Swansea away game last year when we lost 2-0 at the Liberty. I think it's a lot better talking about a draw there than a defeat.
Yeah, and the circumstances of that we'll get into in the recap in just a moment. But before we do that, I'll have another, hopefully a weekly thank you to our Patreon patrons and people who contribute in a monetary form to the podcast and website, and obviously everyone who contributes in just listening and reading is a task that we are very thankful for, and certainly the numbers that you continue to do so always baffles us as to why so many people want to talk about Reading and listen to Reading, but as ever, thank you for those who put their hands in the pocket and helps us out. And that kind of brings us on to my other sort of announcement. As I kind of mentioned last week, we're looking for assistant editors and video producers and those sort of things, you know, software and equipment and whatnot, where as and where we need it and where we can find it is what the Patreon money sort of goes into, and we're looking for people to sort of contribute, people to come in, and we've had a few applicants for helping out with the YouTube channel, helping out with the website, and that obviously is as a gateway to helping out with the podcast as well. So a big thank you to those who've already applied, but the positions are still open. We're looking for a number of people and haven't sort of greenlit anyone yet. We're still in the process of working through the candidates we've got so far. So if you're an older fan, fancy yourself as a bit creative, if you're a younger fan, you're just starting uni or whatnot, or in college, then, you know, everything in between as well, do get in touch, because hopefully there is a place for you at the Tireless End. And the place for the Tireless End at the moment is to talk about 2-1-1 draws, and we'll go into the recap.
View from the Tireless End, recapping this week's championship action.
Right, Ollie, we made a pretty crap start in both these games, to be honest, didn't we? 3 minutes into the Swansea game, we managed to concede. Borja Baston lost his marker. For me, it's a case of, you know, Morrison doesn't do too well, neither does Blackett, really, to stop the crosser. But we're falling behind the last six games now. 1-1, which was the Plymouth game in the Cup, drawn 2 and lost 3. Where's this come from?
It's come from a long, long time ago. I think, you know, it stems back way before Gomez came in, I think. We've really, really struggled. I think it's mainly a mentality issue. I think that 3-2 win over Wigan at the Malayski last season, that dramatic one where Mateo scored very late on, that was, I think, that was the first time in 2 years we'd come from behind to win a game. So that tells you how much of a problem this has been for such a long time. I think it's just a mentality issue. I think, you know, which does sound strange considering, you know, you've got the likes of Liam Moore, Michael Morrison, Andy Eardom, I mean, they're, you know, supposed leaders in that team. But for some reason, this team can't seem to dig itself out when they go behind. I think it's the third time this year we've gone behind it in the opening 10 minutes after Hull away and Blackburn at home. And it just puts you on the back foot straight away, which obviously, you know, it drains any positivity going into the game. I think, obviously, you know, we've not been on the best run of late, and you sort of hope going to a side like Swansea, who are flying high, you know, you can try and keep it tight for as long as possible. But considering after 3 minutes, it just takes away all the sort of positivity going into the game. And, you know, on the plus side, it does give you a lot of time sort of to get back into the game. Obviously, on Saturday, it took us until the 89th minute to do that. But, I mean, I think you can say, you know, at least we aren't getting thrashed. I think, you know, when you concede early on, like we did at the weekend, there's often the worry that you sort of you go and concede 4 or 5. You know, with, sort of Man City against Watford style, when they conceded 5 in the opening 18 minutes. But I think so. You have to credit Reading in that sense that, you know, they didn't let their heads drop down so far is the fact that we didn't then concede, you know, loads more goals. But it just puts you on the back foot straight away. I think, you know, you can say that at least we did get a draw out of today. You know, usually when we've gone behind, you know, we then go on and lose that game. But yeah, it's not good at all.
It must be baffling as a manager as well, as Jose Gomez, and you're right, it does go back to Paul Clement and to Yapstam as well. And the things that they must have told their players, the different routines, the different sort of mantras they'd have imposed, the different ways they'd have talked to them, they must have covered pretty much every base now. So you can't, you can't really pin it on the manager, because it just keeps happening under different managers, and it's the same, pretty much the same group of players that keeps doing it. So is it with the mentality, how do you manage to reverse that? Do you change the formation to go out and say, you know what, we're going to keep it as tight as possible, we're just going to really sit in? Do you, you know, just completely try something radical, which I suppose you can maybe say Jose Gomez is trying to do? Because whatever we're doing at the moment, it's just not, it's not changing, is it? It's not getting any better.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter what time we concede either. I think, you know, we conceded early, as I say, in this game in Swansea and Blackburn and Hull, you know, but, you know, against, I think it was Middlesbrough and Charlton, you know, we didn't concede until the second half, but then still went on to lose that game. So I'm not sure whether it's a case of trying to keep it as tight as possible for as long as possible, because then ultimately if you try and keep tight until the 80th minute and then try and go for it and then concede, you know, then you give yourself even less time to recover. So I think ultimately it might just take a couple of games, you know, where we do go behind and, you know, try and dig deep and try and get a win, and that boosts confidence. I think, you know, I think we sort of hope that might be the case after the Wigan game that I mentioned, that it gives you a bit of confidence you can come from behind to win a game. And I think maybe that is just what it's going to take. You know, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, you know, we can come from behind to win a game, and sort of that will show the players that, you know, we can do this. You know, it's not going to be easy, but if we stick together as a team, you know, then there's every chance. But I think it's, as you say, I think Paul Clement, Yapstam, Jose Gomez must have tried, you know, everything in the book. I think I remember the England national team brought in Dave Beresford, the guy from Team Sky, to sort of do some sort of psychology with the team. And, you know, I don't know whether we need to go that far and try and get someone in to try and, you know, sort of almost coach mentality of the players. But, you know, it's going to be a real problem this season if we can't, you know, win games or even draw games after going behind. You know, then we are going to struggle. And I think either it's a case that we need to sort of go for it, you know, right from the start, so that we don't go behind, and in fact we try and go in front very early on. You know, that might be the way around it, that instead of, you know, trying to shut up shop, we almost try and go for it a lot more and try and get in the lead, so we don't face that predicament of going behind. But yeah, it's a problem that Gomez has to solve. Otherwise, you know, at the end of the day, if we keep going behind and keep losing games, you know, then we're going to fall further and further down the table.
Well, one thing that Reading did do last season was bring in Mark Bowen as a kind of analyst, and perhaps he played, you know, that was the sort of thing that he looked after. He's actually now sporting director at Reading, and I've just seen actually today on Monday an interview with BBC Sport Wales went up for Mark Bowen. So give that a read if you want a bit of an insight into the current sporting director of Reading FC. And one thing, as you say, kind of trying every trick in the book, I think the trick in the book that Gomez has kind of tried to be going on, really, and we kind of saw that I think this is the end of this particular thing. After 21 minutes, Tyler Blackett got injured at Swansea and came off, and Lucas Zhao came on. And for me, yes, it's an injury sort of enforced issue, but that kind of exemplifies for me that if you're changing your game plan after 21 minutes into the game, then it's not gone right. It didn't last long, and you're the first minor opportunity you have to switch things up. Obviously, at 1-0 down, Gomez has taken that. And for me, the 3-5-2 formation he's been playing, I think that's kind of the death knell for it, because if it only lasted 20 minutes into Swansea game, if we're falling behind in all these games and we played it, it feels to me like that needs to be kind of put in its drawer for a little while and just think, you know what, the strategy of the 3-5-2, it has potential. I think the players we have in the squad, it has potential for, but for now, it's just going to have to be put away for a bit.
Yeah, he had Tom McIntyre on the bench as well, so, you know, he could have brought McIntyre on for Blackett, but he didn't. He brought Lucas Shaw on. I think, he's not really sure on what his preferred formation is. He's clearly a fan of the wing backs pushing up, I think, and that's obviously what 3-5-2 allows him to do. Especially Andy Udom, and of course Udom still pushed up, I think, obviously, and got that goal late on. But I think the best change for me actually was when Josh Barrett replaced Lucas Boye at half time. And sort of gave Reading a bit more width on that left-hand side. And I think by all accounts, Josh Barrett had a very, very good game.
And Boye sounded like Lucas Boye was about to get sent off, didn't he? He got a card and apparently just had lost his head sort of thing. So.
Yeah, it was a very wise substitution in hindsight. I think by all accounts, Barrett had a very, very good game after the break and potentially pushing for a start next week. I mean, obviously, he played very well against Plymouth in the League Cup and also featured against Wolves in the League Cup, hasn't really been given his chance in the league yet. But I think certainly based on Saturday's showing, he wouldn't be far off from a starting place on Tuesday or next weekend. But I think certainly that sub sort of made Reading more balanced. I think it helped us keep possession a little bit better. John Swift and Ian Motor were sort of able to drop a little bit deeper and sort of give the defence an option. So I think, I can't imagine he'll go 3-5-2 on Tuesday. I mean, he might surprise us, but I think certainly it is very telling that after 20 minutes, when there is a chance for him to keep that formation with a centre-back on the bench, that he brought on an attacker. And I think, I'd certainly be expecting to perhaps go 4-3-3 on Tuesday.
Well, one of the things I think that the idea of the 3-5-2 is that we kind of go and try and outscore opponents. As you say, with Obita as the sort of left wing back, or as Richards, both go forward very well. Yadom, as for the equaliser shows, you're not going to be able to stop him going forward no matter what. So that's just kind of his game. And 3-5-2, 4-2-3-1, whatever you think is the best antidote to that, you've got to make exception for it.
Yeah, Dom's definitely a wing back, I think, over a full back. I think he's a lot better attacking wise than he is defensively. I think we've seen that not just this season but last year as well. Whenever he goes forward, he always leaves quite a big gap really, in that right back position that has allowed opponents to score. So I think that's definitely his strength. And probably the 3-5-2 benefits him maybe the most out of the whole team because he is so good attacking and not so good defensively.
It's true, and maybe there's even a point for just starting him on the wing in the next game and playing, I guess it's Chris Gunter still, or Teddy Howe, I guess, as our second choice right back and just, throwing Yadon but more or less up front. But the thing is with the 3-5-2 is that it then demands the centre-back come across, and Liam Moore, I don't think he's so good at that. Morrison and Miazga don't have the pace. Blackett was the left centre-back for 3-5-2 on the weekend. He came across when Obita pushed forward for the goal that Swansea scored, and he wasn't able to stop the cross. So I suppose in that sense, it proves itself to not be ready. And at the other end of the pitch, we've scored 4 goals in 5 games. 2 of those were sort of last-minute goals anyway that we'd changed the formation for. And I suppose you can probably say the same for the goal against Blackburn. So it's this idea of leaving gaps in behind that the defenders, the centre-backs can cover across, isn't working. But likewise, the up front is not working either. What's your sort of current consideration on the whole, the Puskas, Boye, Zhao, Mate combination we've got? Mate was captain against Wolves, I believe, in the week when we, just to make sure everyone knows about that, covered the 1-1 draw, which we went out in the League Cup on penalties. Mate was then unavailable against Swansea for personal reasons, so Puskas and Boye started. Puskas, for me, I think the outlay on him is a consideration in me saying this, but for me, he's just the sort of player, bit young, raw, obvious potential, plays out of his skin on certain, probably the big games, you would say. I think you just got to give him a good 10, 12, 15 starts in a row and just say, yes, he's going to miss some chances in that run, but surely he's got to be the better for it.
Yeah, no, I think we've spoken about expected goals a lot. I know me and Sim spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, and I think you and Matt, Panas and Nutmeg Lawrence spoke about it a couple of weeks ago as well. And I think Puskas is actually quite high. And I think that shows that he's getting into these good positions. I think that the problem is now he's not taking the chances. And I think ultimately that's why a player like him is at Reading. I think we were all very excited when he signed for us in the summer for a lot of money. And there are a lot of teams supposedly after him. But he's been playing in the second tier of Italian football for the last couple of years. And he's just joined a team that's finished 20th in the Championship for the last 2 years. So he can't be the finished article yet. And I think hopefully you say it just gets better with time. I mean, he missed a really, really bad one. It has to be said against Swansea at the weekend. You know, I think from only a couple of yards out, just put it over the bar. So hopefully it gets better. I think, you know, but we have got options. I think that's, you know, you said we've got Puskás, Shaw, Mate, Lucas Boye. I don't mind Gomez rotating those four. I think it's not as important to have a settled attack, you know, as it is to have a settled defence. I think, especially when you've got all those options, you know, those four strikers, you know, where there isn't particularly one who's considerably better or worse than the others. You know, they've all got goals this season. Mate and Puskás, I think, have three each, and Lucas Young and Lucas Boye have one goal each. So they're all good options to have. I think it's not a case of, you know, picking a settled one or a settled two. I think it's good to have those options in the squad, and, you know, hopefully, you know, sooner rather than later, at least one of them, you know, sort of start scoring. And whether, you know, maybe then if that one individual sort of has a dry spell, you know, someone else can come in. So they are good options to have. But I think, yeah, I think especially with Puskás now, he needs to start taking his chances, because we aren't struggling creating opportunities, and I think we create a lot of goals. I think the XG table has us, you know, quite high up in the table. So that's not the issue at the moment. You've got players like John Swift and Ovi Ejaria and the wing backs that we mentioned, you know, who can create chances for these forwards, but, you know, they do need to now start putting them in the back of the net.
I suppose that was kind of the risk that a lot of Sheffield Wednesday fans said about Zhao in particular, was that he takes, you know, one in every three great chances, and that does mean he scores 12, 15 goals a season, but it means he could have scored 45 basically if he actually could finish his dinner. And Mate, we know, is a bit streaky. Puskás, I suppose the only other thing I'd add, obviously, if you do give him loads of starts, you do risk kind of knocking his confidence massively, and that can be a player, you know, in a new country, in a new league and whatnot, perhaps. If you really ruin his football in a sense, then that can take a bit of a snowball effect. So hopefully that'll sort itself out. But credit to Lucas Shaw, actually came off the bench and set up Yeardom's equaliser on the weekend with a nice little bit of interplay. John Swift was involved in it, and John Swift, we've got to mention his Rabona, absolute wonderful setup for Lucas Boye in the 99th minute of the Wolves game in midweek. We obviously lost on penalties, but when you go away to a Premier League team and concede early on, and then, you know, you score an absolutely wonderful goal to get back into it, it just reminds Ollie that John Swift is probably, maybe, well, just the, actually, in terms of general, most talented footballer at the club. He is that.
Yeah, I think in terms of raw ability, you're not going to get a better player. I mean, the absolute audacity to try that, you know, not only when Reading are 1-0 down, but in the 99th minute, you know, where if that goes wrong, you know, then he gets, you know, geared by the Wolves fans. But you aren't going to see a better assist than that all season, I don't think. You know, I've got friends at uni, you know, who support, you know, Chelsea, United, Arsenal, you know, who always take the mick out of me for supporting Reading. But even they were talking about that John Swift assist on Thursday morning. You know, it was just incredible. You know, we've seen glimpses of Swift over the last couple of years. You know, he had that very good spell when he first joined the club, you know, but sort of struggled with injury over the last couple of years and not being quite so consistent. But, you know, he's really thriving at the moment. And that was just fantastic to see. You know, it was out of this world.
I think he's in effectively the form of his life at the moment, isn't he? He is with the jar at the moment. Those are the two sort of shining lights. And Swift, I think, in particular, we'll talk about in news bites. We've got our September Player of the Month poll up at the moment. I think he is, you know, basically in the best form he's ever been in for Reading, and probably by quite some distance.
I think you can't forget that when he first joined the club, I think, you know, he was in very, very good form then, I think.
He was, but he kind of traded off worldies, didn't he? He hit a couple 30, 25-yard sort of worldie goals, and I think that probably carried him, certainly in terms of our memory, for that period.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think, obviously, he was playing in a winning team at that time as well. So yeah. At the moment, he's sort of impressing, you know, when the team are losing games. So, yeah, I think he's definitely enjoying his football. You know, I think, obviously, when he joined Reading, he was only sort of 21. Now he's 24, you know, so he's moving in sort of to perhaps the prime of his career. And, yeah, no, he's doing really, really well. And I think you can tell he's enjoying his football as well. I think he's had a difficult couple of years, as I say, with injuries. But I think certainly the system and sort of playing under Gomez, you know, really helps him, I think.
Well, at the opposite end of the scale in terms of form at the moment, it's worth mentioning that the Wolves goal went in via João Virginia error. This the Everton loanee, of course, who is, I think he's still 19, isn't he, João Virginia? And
yeah, he turns 20 next month, I think.
And he's come in and he's, you know, been given a very decent chance for someone who I think has never made his professional debut before he came to Reading. He's been in the Arsenal Academy, then most recently the Everton Academy, from which he's on loan from. Reading have given him a chance. And is it a sense that after, you know, it was the classic ball straight through his legs from distance, like a nice easy save that he's fumbled into his own net? Is it safe to say that for now, at least, his Reading career is kind of done and dusted with, I think, Sam Walker came back onto the bench for the Swansea game?
Yeah, I think, sadly, I mean, unless he plays in the FA Cup, I don't think we'll see him again, obviously, unless Raphael gets injured. But even then, like, I'm not sure whether Gomez will pick either him or Walker. But yeah, no, I think you can tell, you know, since Raphael's come in, you know, he's definitely a much better goalkeeper, much more comfortable, much more reliable, I think. Even with Raphael, you know, you sort of had your issues perhaps. I think, you know, he only played 6 games in 4 years prior to joining Reading, but he's come in and looked really, really good and sort of showed his experience. And yeah, I think I'm gutted for Virginia, really, because I think, you know, he's had a bit of a hard time with it. You know, as you say, he's only 19, you know, not played any senior football before he came to Reading. So, you know, he'd be thrown in the deep end, really. And I think it's very, very rare you sort of see these young goalkeepers have their first loan spells in the Championship. I think, especially, you know, when he was first brought in on loan, I think certainly the intention was for him to be first choice in the Championship, which is a big, big responsibility for someone of his age. I think I wrote a piece on it in the summer, actually, that it's almost unprecedented for a goalkeeper of his age to be playing first choice. I think not since Jack Butland with, I think, Birmingham, sort of, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, as a 19-year-old goalkeeper, sort of being the first choice keeper for their side. So it was a big responsibility, but yeah, it's very, very difficult for him. You know, he was hyped up massively, sort of by Marco Silva and by David Unsworth at Everton, sort of saying that he was far too good for academy football and that he was the best academy goalkeeper that they'd ever seen. So that sort of gives you a bit of a unrealistic expectation for him to come in. He made that error against Hull very early on in the season, and then against Wolves midweek. And I think, sadly, you know, he's perhaps just not quite ready enough for senior football just yet. I think, you know, you often look at these young players and maybe their first loan spells don't quite work out, and maybe, you know, it's not till a couple more years time that he's ready for the senior football. And I think you do see that a lot. I think if he is clearly too good for academy football but not quite good enough for senior football, then where does that place him? I think, you know, you look at someone like Danny Loder, who's perhaps sort of in the same boat, that is far too good to be playing, you know, under-23s, but then can't quite grasp, you know, the sort of nature of senior football. So he is in a very tricky position, but I think, you know, hopefully, I think certainly being with Reading at least will hopefully help him for the rest of the season. You know, I think being in and around a senior squad, you know, who hopefully can kick on and push up the table, will be more beneficial for him in the long term than sort of, you know, staying with the Everton Academy and not really doing an awful lot. You know, I know he won the league with them last year, but I think even if he doesn't play, I think being in the Reading senior squad will help him a lot. You know, he's definitely a good goalkeeper. You know, you can't question that. I think you don't get the record that he did, you know, with Everton last year without being a good goalkeeper. But yeah, I think sadly not quite ready for senior football yet. But as I say, that's not, you know, unsurprising for a goalkeeper of his age.
And he made a very good save against Wolves, actually. I think it was just either side of the goal that he let in. I think it was a pretty decent save that he made low and down to a hard shot. So yeah, I think the thing is that obviously a lot of fans will jump on his back and everything, and he becomes an easy target because he is a loanee. If he was one of our own academy players, I can't imagine he'd get anything like the sort of...
If it was, you know, Luke Southwood, for example, I don't think he'd be getting what he has done.
No, and that's the thing, is that the question for me is not so much on Virginia himself. You know, as we've just said, he's a young keeper who probably has a very big future in the game. But the question is why Reading signed him. Reading signed him, I think he was the first signing of the summer. This was at a period when we were under the sort of soft transfer embargo, where everything we had to do was green lit by the league. If we truly had as little money then as we thought we did, then we probably got him for completely free. We're probably not paying any of his wages, and maybe we're not paying his wages on the basis that we played him in 5 senior games or something like that. And I don't know how many Virginia's had, but he might have reached the amount that, or, you know, Reading are going to send him back in January or something like that. And the sort of agreement that we had with Everton to take him could have been in a number of different guises. So So I think, as I say, for Virginia's career at Reading, for the moment at least, I think it's probably just about done and dusted, and being out of the cup is a big part of that. And Reading have Sam Walker, and Reading have a couple of their own academy players as well to consider. So it's not as if it wasn't a worthwhile experiment if he is quite as good as they think it is. But for now, it's something that we need to, you know, accept that that's how it happened and move on. And we'll move on to talk about just the championship in general in a minute. But we're going to hear now from Jose Gomez and how he rated the 1-1 draw at Swansea.
Well, the first half was a bit strange, you know, because we came to the game with a plan, and we blocked their midfielders, their source. They scored in the third minute, but from across, so wide players. But usually they are very dangerous on the middle, very, very dangerous. And we blocked this, so we did well. When we changed, because Blackett was injured, the team got it too much time to organize themselves. In the end of the first half, we were better. But they take too much time. Nothing serious happened. No goal situations for them, but a quite balanced first half. Second half, we were too much better, in my opinion. We controlled the game. We played okay. They in two contra attacks. In one of them, they create a danger situation, but we controlled the game. We put Swansea defending in their box. We tried to find the spaces, some small mistakes that we, when we lost the ball near their box, that we could use better the ball over there. But I'm happy with what my players did, and the spirit that they showed in this first half. Again, we just have 8 points, but we have 10 points between us and Swansea. But if you come to the stadium, watch the game, you couldn't say that which team was in with 18 points or with 8. And if you look the second half, maybe you say that Reading is with 18 points, and so. So what I want to mean is that want to say is the way that we have been working, you know, the way that my players showed this football, quality football, we will get the results. You know, it's a question of time, we will get.
Right, then let's round off the recap, Ollie, with a quick look at how things are going in the Championship in general, and focusing on how the relegation battle is kind of unfolding at the moment. Reading are 20th in the table with 9 games in, so just about the sort of time when you can start taking the table seriously. We're a full 11 points off the top and a good 7 points away from the bottom. Barnsley, Huddersfield and Stoke are the 3 in the relegation zone at the moment. Wigan, Middlesbrough, Millwall, Luton and Hull just about around us at the moment. And if we are to be dragged into a relegation battle this season, obviously we don't want to be, but who do you kind of feel like we'll be up against if we are?
At the start of the season, I said the 3 to go down would be Barnsley, Wigan and Charlton. So 2 of those are proving me right, and obviously one of those, Charlton, is proving me very, very wrong. They're doing very well in the top 6. And I think Barnsley and Wigan will be down there, as they are at the moment. I think especially Wigan, you know, they're sort of struggling to score goals this year. I think they've got the fewest goals in the league so far. So, and you know, they lost Nick Powell in the summer. Reece James has gone back to Chelsea. So I think they are sort of lacking that quality, and I'd expect them to be down there at the end of the year. Stoke and Huddersfield are sort of funny ones. I think obviously, you know, they're in terms of their sort of profile, that, you know, they're very recent Premier League side, so you wouldn't expect to see them down at the moment, but you can sort of see why both of them are. I think, you know, Stoke especially look in complete disarray. I think, you know, no wins in 9 games, now bottom of the table, and I think Nathan Jones, it's his job sort of hanging by a thread a little bit, I think. And you know, he gave a very honest interview after their defeat to Forest at the weekend, I think, and he was sort of saying that, you know, he's doing all he can in training, but can't really affect sort of the individual errors that are happening on the pitch. And I know Jack Butland, who, you know, supposedly tipped for England a couple of years ago, has made a couple of, you know, sort of high profile errors this year. So, you know, going back to Virginia, you know, it shows that errors aren't, you know, just from young goalkeepers. You know, Jack Butland's a very experienced goalkeeper, but, you know, he's still not having the best form at the moment for Stoke. So I think it will probably take a managerial switch there to change them around. I think Nathan Jones has probably gone as far as he can with them, which is unfortunate to say, because he had a very good career at Luton and did very well with them, and obviously he's just sadly just picked the wrong club in their championship. But hopefully, he'll get another job very soon and sort of do very well with that. And Huddersfield obviously have switched their manager, the Cowley brothers coming in, and that is a very, very big job for them. I think I was quite surprised to see them take that one over sort of maybe Sheffield Wednesday that they might have been offered, but I think you can maybe see why they have taken it. I think, there's a chance to build something there. I think as I say, they were only in the Premier League last year, so it's quite a high profile club for them, and sort of the opportunity to turn it around, and especially, if they do keep Huddersfield up, then that'll be just another achievement on their long list of accolades. So I think especially with that Huddersfield side, I think, those players have been, in a losing mentality for so long now. We've spoken about this a lot at Reading, but, Huddersfield had a dreadful year last year in the Premier League and have started this year, with no wins so far. So I think it'll be a case of trying to get them out of that rut. As I say, we've seen that with Reading and how hard that is to do. So I think they've got a very big job on their hands, and I would expect Huddersfield to be battling down there, for the rest of the campaign. But I don't think there's going to be a standout, terrible side. I think, obviously, we saw last year that Ipswich were sort of, virtually relegated in December, really. I mean, obviously, they weren't mathematically, but you couldn't really see a way, how they were going to get out of it. And likewise, Bolton, they had a bit of a push, but, ultimately, Bolton and Ipswich were sort of, almost guaranteed relegation candidates, by the time you got to the business end of stuff. And then it was sort of one from four or five, really. So I don't think we'll see that this year. I think we'll see a much closer battle. Which probably will mean Reading are going to need to be an awful lot better. So, it'll be three from five as opposed to one from five this year. So I think, hopefully we can push away from it. But I think if we are down there, it will take a lot more. I think probably more points than we got last season to survive.
Well, the first thing to think about, I suppose, is that Huddersfield and Stoke play each other on Tuesday night. So that is something's going to have to give unless they draw 0-0, I suppose. So, yeah, I think the thing is with Huddersfield is they weren't just kind of bad last season when they got relegated. They were bad for the 6 months of the season before. And they were kind of, in my opinion, they were very lucky to stay up in the Premier League. And they've obviously, the goal scoring and the recruitment has... It's all just continued to collapse in on itself. And that Cowley brothers move, it really strikes me of when Eddie Howe went to Burnley away from Bournemouth, and then he went back to Bournemouth, and it was actually like, you probably should have just stayed at Bournemouth in the first place. And I can kind of see the Cowley brothers going back to Lincoln in the next couple of years or so. And
I hope they do really well, actually, to be fair, because they've done fantastically at Lincoln. We've seen, I know me and Sim spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, these managers coming up from League One, Nathan Jones, as I say, to Stoke, and Paul Hurst, which last year as well, and not doing so well. So, but I really do hope the Cowley brothers do very well at Huddersfield.
And they did very well at Braintree and Concord, I think it was, as well. So they've got pedigree, and they have the potential, but whether it's a club that they can turn around or not, I must admit I'm kind of sceptical. And with Stoke, I mean, You speak to Stoke fans, and I think they're as mystified as the rest of us as to how what's going on there. And in terms of who Reading are going to be battling, you like to think that if Wigan and Barnsley are down there, that we'd have enough quality at the very least to get more points than them. And then when it comes to if Reading are in a scrap with bigger teams that have got good players that have the potential to go on, like a 9-game winning run, let's say, you might say Middlesbrough, Huddersfield, Stoke are in those sort of categories, then it's very difficult if you're fighting against the sort of sleeping giant-esque teams in the Championship. So, just some thoughts on the Championship relegation battle as we go into the slug of the season after the international break that's coming up in a couple of weeks. So we'll see how that maintains, and hopefully it's something that Reading can look from in a pretty comfortable position. So we'll move on now and move on with the show and go into the mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Just the one question this week. I suppose we get quite a few when we lose, and we get a couple when we win, and when we draw, we get one this week. So that's how it is. Ray has sent us in a pretty good question, though. It's at what point do we question our manager's ability to get the most from our players, considering this is the largest amount of money we have spent on signings? Now, for Is it the most we've spent on signings this summer? Because yes, we've spent, let's say, £8 million on Puskás and £5 million on Zhao. But I thought the idea was that we'd only really spent about £3 million on them this summer. So I suppose it gives us a bit more of a long-term aspect in terms of how the, you know, the actual players are going to pan out over the next few years and whatnot. But of the new signings then, Ollie, is it a case that we've not got too much out of them? I would say that we've got a decent amount out of Rafael so far. Ajari is kind of plugged in as he, you know, as we knew him before. We've discussed Virginia, and it's probably out of Gomez's control exactly how good he is. Miazga hasn't been at his heights of last season, but he's had injury problems. Pele, I suppose, hasn't done too well. Boye has probably done as well as I think we probably thought he was ever going to do. What do you think about the way that Gomez has handled the new boys?
I think it's important to point out that, as you say, I think, you know, Puskás and Zhao are the only ones we've actually spent money on. I think, you know, the rest of them have either been, you know, free signings in the case of Rafael or Charlie Adam. You know, the other ones have been loan signings, Boy, Miazga, and Majoria. So Puskás and Zhao are the only ones we've spent money on. And I think that the price tags that, you know, have been reported, you know, sort of £7-8 million for both of them, you know, perhaps have, you know, maybe heightened expectations of those two. And I think especially, you know, when you pay that much money for a player, especially in Puskás's case, you know, when you break the record signing for him, it puts an awful lot of expectation on him. So whether they're performing, you know, they are probably performing under those expectations, but it's probably a case that those expectations perhaps were too high. As I say, the price tag, you know, gives you sort of an unrealistic expectation of them. So I think they probably aren't worth that amount of money, maybe. I think you certainly would say that we maybe paid over the odds. I think, you know, it got very late in the window. We felt we needed to get someone in. You know, we hadn't started the season in the best of form. So it was probably felt that we needed to get those players in. So I think that money does, you know, maybe boost their expectations. So whether you can question Gomez for that, I think, you know, obviously, you know, how much he can control whether Puskás takes a chance, you know, from a one-on-one or sort of puts over the bar, that's not really in sort of Gomez's control. I think, you know, he puts those players out there. He doesn't, you know, he bought Puskás to score those chances. You know, he didn't buy Puskás to miss them. So I think it's a case of, as I said earlier, hopefully giving them time. As I say, you know, that money, I think it probably is the most we've spent. I think it depends on those instalments. You know, we obviously spent quite a lot in the summer of 2017, you know, when Sonny Luca came in and you know, Bakuna as well. So I think you probably have to, I think you don't want money to finish where they are at the moment. I think based on that money spent, I think you'd probably take mid-table from the money they spent. But I think it does need to slowly improve. But I don't think we should be expecting playoffs for anything like that, I don't think.
No, and the thing is as well is that it's as you bring in these new signings, they've got to work to play with each other. If you look at the players who have played the most amount of minutes in Reading's Championship season so far, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them are new. 2 of them are last year's loanees. So, and then you've got a couple, obviously, like Moore and Swift and whatnot. So, it's just that case of, I think, as Gomez says in his comments, it's that case of needing time. It's the case of, as well, getting to know the players and what system they play in. Is Morrison better in a back three or back two? I think he's probably not really one of the ones that people are questioning at the moment. Pele, people question him, but is he actually better in a proper sort of two-man holding midfield alongside Winamoto? He might look brilliant in that. We haven't really seen it yet. And then, I suppose, after that, you're kind of into the peripheral signings. Obviously, Charlie Adam, he's only really played 53 minutes in the league so far, and all of those off the bench, and none of them, I suppose, in the first game he was all right, but otherwise than that, he's not been too impressive. So
it's got man match in that first game, I think, in our player ratings poll. So
yeah, well, I suppose maybe that's why is the expectations have risen for him so much as well. But yeah, it's just a case of, you know, what do you think that these players are capable of? And when it comes to Puskás and Zhao, I suppose those are the two that they've both played 8 games in the league so far. They've both actually played near enough the same amount of minutes. And Puskás has 2 goals, Zhao has 1, but Zhao has 2 assists. So it's just a case of hopefully Gomez has an idea. Hopefully what we're watching now isn't the same sort of football, the same, maybe in the same formation, the same lineup that we're watching in February, March, when it breaks down to the business end of the season.
Yeah, no, I think you have to give this team time. A lot of summer signings, we said it before, I think you have to give this team to gel. It's really only been, not even 2 months, that this team is playing together, and sort of Gomez has sort of found his settled side. I don't think he's fully happy, he hasn't found, his perfect 11 yet, but, by any means. But I think hopefully, 1 month under the line, a couple more games, this side does become more settled, because it is still very, very early days in the grand scheme of things. We've still got, a lot of games to play. So I don't think you can really judge, either, A, any of the signings or B, Gomez on how he manages them. I don't think until maybe around Christmas time, because it is a very new team. I think if you look at, I was looking back at some of our lineups from sort of this time last year, and the amount the team has changed in such a short space of time, it's incredible, really. So I think you have to give, this new team time. We probably will lose more games than we win between now and the end of the season, but I don't think that's a bad thing. Obviously, it is a bad thing, but it's not. It doesn't mean we're going to go down. So I think you have to give this team time, as I say, probably until Christmas, until you can make a full judgment sort of on how they're doing.
And it's also important to remember, my last point on this is that Gomez is learning new things about these players every week. And let's just think that Gomez might well have known about Lucas Joao, and he obviously knew about, Miazga, and probably didn't really know anything about George Puskás until about 3-4 months ago at the earliest. So if he's got to learn how to handle these players, if he's got to learn how to talk to these players, I can't imagine Puskás speaks much English, for example, and I can't imagine Jose Gomez necessarily speaks too much Romanian. So it's just a case of these guys taking time to get to know each other off the pitch and then working out how to get the best out of them on the pitch. So
they're probably not all his signings either, I don't think. Obviously, we've spoken quite a lot about the influence of Kier. So how many of these players, Gomez personally wanted himself, I'm not too sure, but he's been given these players to work with. So he has to get the best out of them, whether he wanted them or not, I think.
Yeah, and Gomez strikes me as a coach over a sort of all hands on, I'll do everything manager. And I suppose that's just the way the club is set up at the moment, with Kier Jirach been having a bit of an influence, and obviously Nigel Howe and Mark Bowen as well, leading from, the boardroom. So yeah, we'll see how that goes on. And as I say, I think with Puskás, you kind of give him a run of games and we'll see how that goes. But for now, let's move on to News Bites and see how things are getting on around the other aspects of the club.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Some Tarlhurst End site news to begin with. As we're recording this on the 30th of September, that means it is time for the Player of the Month competition. Ovi Ejaria, Raphael, John Swift and Andy Yeardom are all up for the award. It's probably no surprise, after I said that he's probably in the form of his career early, that I'd probably be going for John Swift for this, Ollie. And I think, judging by the poll so far, a lot of fans are as well.
Yep, that's also who I'd be going with. I think, we obviously haven't had a great September. I think we haven't won in four games. Obviously, two draws, if you're counting the Wolves game as a draw, and two defeats. So there's not, standout performances to choose from. But yeah, I'd probably go with John Swift. I think I will put a word for Raphael, actually. I think, I did the Player of the Month piece. He didn't win any of our Man of the Match was Raphael, but I think that's sort of testament, perhaps how we sort of come to expect, reliable and sort of comfortable performances from him, in such a short space of time. I don't think you can sort of underrate that, really, overstate that. Sorry, I think because he's not played much football before, joining Reading, and I think he's come in, and played really, really well. And I think you can rely on him. I think, we didn't know much about him before he came to the club. And obviously, as I say, he played 6 games in 4 years. So, but he slotted in really, really well. Didn't know any English when he came in and has done really well there as well. So I think a quick word for him. But yeah, I'd go for John Swift as well.
Well, do you know what we've not done with Raphael? And that's talk about him. And that's a good sign for a goalkeeper. If he is completely out the news, and João Virginia only played one game and we've spent 10 minutes talking about him today, and we haven't spent anything talking about Raphael, who's played all of the Swansea game and all our league games pretty much since he came in. So yeah, he's basically done as much as we could ever have asked of him. He's probably not on the Emiliano Martinez level as a goalkeeper, but Martinez was playing for Arsenal in the Europa League and getting a load of rave reviews for that in the last couple of weeks. So that is absolutely no surprise to us at Reading. We know how good that our goalkeeper was last season. This year we've got a free man out of Serie A, and he's done as pretty much as well as we could hope. So yeah, definitely worth an honourable mention for Raphael. And if he continues on this sort of form through the rest of the season, I think he'll become quite quickly a bit of a fan favourite, a bit of a cult hero that will be very happy we signed for free. You know, he's probably on a decent wage, but for free transfer fee, so that's good. And into the just a quick roundup of the other action for the other teams. There's not really too much gone on this week because the women had their game against Birmingham postponed due to waterlogged pitch. They beat Spurs 4-0 in the Conti Cup last time out, so nice easy win against what is a not very good team beforehand. So their next action on October the 13th, actually, down Adams Park in Wickham. They're playing Everton. That's at 2 p.m. Everton have started the season quite well, so a bit of a competitive game there. For those heading down to Wickham on October the 13th, that's at 2 p.m, the kickoff. So if you want to get down to that. Then the under-23s, they take on Stoke tonight after we've recorded this. They're currently fifth in the Premier League 2 table. And the under-18s, they lost 4-3 to Derby last time out. They're next up against Arsenal on Saturday. That's at home on at the training ground. And they're currently eighth in the Premier League South. So the academy side's kind of ticking along quite nicely at the moment. Can't really overstate or can't really get too involved in their sort of Premier League table positions at this stage of the season. But yeah, lots of goals going in, certainly, as well, because the under-23s lost 5-4 the other week as well. So we'll move on then and talk about a couple of very big games for Reading in the next few days, and we'll go on to big game preview.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
8 p.m. back at the Mad Stad on Tuesday night. It is Fulham. I'm trying to build this up as a big game, Ollie, but do you know our last five meetings in the league with Fulham have gone 1-0, 1-1, 1-0, 1-1, 1-0. So this is not a very entertaining game over the years, even if those two of those were in the playoffs. This has been a pretty low scoring game, and Fulham's last five games themselves have been 2-0, 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, 0-1. So is there going to be any? Is this game just going to finish 1-1? Is that basically what is going before us now?
Well, I mean, I think I'd probably take a 1-1 against Fulham, to be honest with you. So, they're a very talented side. You know, they've got a lot of good attacking players, you know, so I'm quite surprised, actually, that they haven't scored more goals, you know, in recent weeks. You know, they've got a very, very good attack. You know, Mitrovic, I'm surprised that he stayed this year, actually. He scored a lot of goals, obviously, in the Premier League last year. He's got five already this year. Cavalero and Anthony Knockhart are very, very good wingers at this level as well. So, and they got Bobby Reid on loan from Cardiff, who I think has mainly been used off the bench, but an awful lot of attacking options for them this season. You know, so I'm quite surprised they haven't scored more goals so far. I think Tom Kenny's got a couple as well, but yeah, it's going to be a tough test. You know, we know how good a side Fulham are. I know they're probably the best out of the three relegated sides so far. You know, obviously we've beaten both Cardiff and Huddersfield so far, so you know, hopefully if that trend can continue, you know, we can beat Fulham. But I think it will be a very, very difficult game. I think you know, even defensively, you know, they've still got a lot of the squad that were in the Premier League last year. You know, look at people like Alfie Mawson and Tim Ream, who are very, very good defenders. I know Mawson especially, you know, was sort of tipped for an England call up a couple of years ago. So you know, there's no doubt, in sort of on paper, you know, they have definitely got one of the best sides in the league. But you know, that they are only 10th at the moment, so you know, they aren't you know, right at the top there. But I think I would expect them to be sort of pushing, you know, for that top two, or certainly in the playoffs come the end of the season. So yeah, I would definitely take a 1-1 at this moment in time.
Well, they've got the joint third best defence at the moment, which is very the opposite completely of what they were like last season. So Scott Parker still in charge there, was obviously, you know, just as prioritised that. And as I suppose maybe his thought process, as you say, with Mitrovic, Kearney, Caballero up front, he's kind of just let them get on with it. And maybe that's not reaped the rewards as much as they would want so far. But from a Reading point of view, what sort of changes are you going to think about making for this game? With Puskas and Boyer were the ones who started up front in the last game with the 3-5-2. Yaku Meite, as we said, was out of the squad for personal reasons. We presume he would be back. So yeah, it's. I think if we are going to change the formation, I think you are going to probably see Barrett or Boyer or Meite moved out to the wing. Swift, Ejaria and Winamata, or you know, maybe Pele will come in as a pretty basic sort of one of those in behind, and then the other two running the show from the midfield. So it's kind of hard to get a grip on exactly where this game, you know, how it's going to set up.
Yeah, as I said earlier, I probably would bring Josh Barrett in. I think he deserves his chance in the league. I think it's a big game with Fulham being a good side. But, you know, as I say, he's deserved his chance. He played very well against Plymouth in the League Cup and got two goals there. Obviously got a great goal against Chelsea in pre-season as well. And played, you know, fairly well against Wolves, and obviously played very well when he came on against Swansea. So I think he definitely deserves his chance. I'd probably put him on the left wing, probably in the 4-3-3. Maybe bring, the problem now with sort of, if we are going to ditch the 3-5-2 and go to a formation that requires wingers, is that we've sold most of them. So
Gareth McCleary is still at the club, and he's been playing a couple of times for the under-23s.
Yeah, we could bring Gareth McCleary back in. Obviously, you know, Mo Bauer's gone loads of Turkey, but yeah, you know, we haven't got many wingers we can play. So either, yeah, you do bring McCleary in, which I'm sure the Gomez won't do, but probably Yaku Mate, I suppose, then we'll play out wide, which maybe isn't his best position, but he's probably one of the only players that can play out there. You know, we mentioned Yeardon earlier, he might play him there, but again, I'd be very surprised. But yeah, I'd probably go 4-3-3, maybe with a couple of makeshift wingers. I think Josh Barrett's probably better out there, so he'll go on the left, Mate on the right, and then I'd probably keep Puskas up there, just in the hope that he can grab a goal. I think, you know, maybe if he goes a couple more games without scoring, then you perhaps consider changing it. But you know, here's our record signing. You know, he's supposedly our main striker. So I think you have to have confidence in him. Hopefully, you know, it's a big game against a very good side, and hopefully he can rise to the occasion. So you know, I'd probably go with a 4-3-3.
He does strike me as a big game player, Puskas. He played very well against Spain in the Euro qualifiers the other week. So that's the sort
when
of...
When we were on TV as well against Cardiff, he got two. That's obviously his best game, and that was on TV against a relegated side. So
yeah, I definitely think that's the sort of mentality that he carries with him. And fair enough, really. I suppose, if especially when you're new to a league, it's probably a little bit easier to motivate yourself when you're playing against, you know, players you've heard of and on the TV and whatnot. And hopefully this is the Fulham game is, even though they are 10th in the league, that's the sort of game that he can capitalise on. We then go to Bristol City on Saturday at 3 p.m. kickoff. Obviously, you can get the Star coaches and whatnot. The online booking is open for Star to get down to that. Bristol City, 8th in the league, only one defeat so far in the division, and then we have an international break. So this week as a whole then, Ollie, it's looking... I mean, many teams would come out of it with 0 points, quite frankly. And Reading, if we came out with two, if we came out with 3 points, I think we probably just about, depending on performances, if you came out with a win and a loss or two draws, you'd probably just about say, you know what, fair enough, these two teams are good teams in the Championship, and you know, performance pending, it might not be the worst scenario.
Yeah, if I'm being honest, you know, very honest, I'd probably say we'll probably lose both of them. I think, which obviously is disappointing to say, and obviously would make our, I think it would be 7 games without a win if we didn't win either of these two games. So, but I think you have to look at the bigger picture. I think personally, I would expect both of these teams, both Fulham and Bristol City, to be in the top six come the end of the season. I think both of them are very, very good sides. I think, obviously, as you mentioned, Bristol City haven't lost since the opening day of the season. That was against Leeds, who are obviously another good side. So they seem to be quite a well-run club. I think, obviously, you know, Lee Johnson's been there for a very long time, doing very, very well there at the moment. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a difficult game for us. As I say, I think I would definitely take a point, from both games. And I think, you know, Ashton Gate's a very hard place to go. And as I say, Johnson sets the sides up very, very well. So, yeah, it's a very difficult week. I think you can't deny that. And I think there's a chance, obviously, if we don't win either of those two games, or, you know, even if we lose both of those two games, then there is going to be a bit of panic setting. There's a chance, you know, as I say, if we lose both of those games, then we might even finish the week in the relegation zone. So I'm sort of, you know, foreshadowing, you know, perhaps a bit of panic amongst the fan base, but I think I'll say it now. I think it's probably one of the harder weeks we'll have throughout the season, because they are two very, very good sides. So it wouldn't be any need, I don't think, to panic. I think as long as, you know, we can react to that, you know, we've got, you know, a couple, you know, we've got Preston after the international break, then QPR and then Nottingham Forest, you know, so, you know, there are no easy games in this division, but I think these two will be two of the harder ones. And I think, it wouldn't be a disaster if we didn't win either of those two. I think it would be a pleasant surprise. But I wouldn't be worrying too much based on sort of the quality of the opposition.
No, and I do have a feeling this is more for the Bristol game, because as we said, Fulham are quite defensive at the moment and will set up. You would get the impression they would set up quite tight, but I do get the feeling that Bristol and probably Swansea as well, we did have a lot of shots, and Wolves, we obviously came away with a 1-1 draw before the penalties. So that, to me, says that when we're playing teams that are open, when we're playing teams that want to come on to us and there's a bit more space and we can utilise that, then that's when we're better. So maybe the Bristol City game will suit us. Maybe the Fulham game won't suit us. On that sense, let's finish the show then, Ollie, with the predictions. The league table at the moment has a bit of an odd look to it, because I've after predicting 1-1 against Swansea, I've now got 11 points. The next closest has 4 points, so there's a bit of a gap has opened up between myself and Westy Wim and Johnny on 4. Yourself is on 3, and then Handbags and Sim on 2. So I suppose I should be going first. For the predictions for Fulham, and I'm going to say 1-0 defeat, because if we haven't got our scoring set up yet, if we are going to change formation, that creates a lot of unpredictability. Fulham look to be pretty assured of themselves so far. They've added a lot of draws, and if they have that extra bit of quality over us on Tuesday, then I think they'll probably just take the points.
I don't think we'll be blown away. You know, we haven't been blown away by any team so far this season. I think obviously the only game we've sort of lost by more than one goal was that Charlton game. So, it was around this time last season we were saying that, and then got beat, I think, 4-1 by West Brom. So, hopefully that doesn't happen again. But yeah, I think it will be a tight game, but a game that we probably will lose. I'm going to go 2-1 to Fulham, I think. I think Puskas will score. As I say, hopefully he'll rise to the occasion, but I think Fulham's quality probably will show. So I'm going to go 2-1 to Fulham.
Well, hopefully this is the foreshadowing of the Tarlas then being proved wrong, basically. As Reading fans, that's the best we can... That's what we can hope for this Tuesday night. So yeah, 8 p.m. Get yourself down to the Madstad if you can. Hopefully, it won't be too chilly an evening. Although I think we're certainly getting into that sort of stage of the season now, with the dark nights creeping in, and hopefully that's what's going to be able to turn around Reading's performances. And well, thank you, Ollie, for popping by for this week's podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll be back next week, and then obviously it'll be an international break, so we'll probably give ourselves a week off after that. But yes, next Monday you can expect episode 205. That draws to a close episode 204. Thank you very much for listening, and as you've just heard, we are going into a pretty difficult week of fixtures for Reading FC. Let's hope that while the easy games were the ones we lost, that the hard games are the ones we win, and we'll be laughing our way away from the relegation zone. Come on, you arse! You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it's